One of the big things that we're concerned about is, one of our big questions is, what is the total land use change footprint of oil and gas development? And we've done quite a bit of work mapping pipelines, well pads, retention ponds, that kind of thing, in the heart of the plays, the Utica and the Marcellus and the Bakken. But when we're looking at this, we're saying we're missing something. So what came up was, we were thinking, what are some of the big resources needed to do this high volume hydraulic fracturing? We obviously know about water, but the second biggest thing needed is sand. So we did a little snooping around and we said, well, where are these mines? Where were they? Where are they? We need to map these. We need to understand their effects on the landscape, that kind of thing. So this brought us to this question. I had a student named Elliot Kurtz, who's now at the University of Michigan working on this project with me. And I think we've developed some pretty interesting results. But as my wife always says, pretty pictures are always so helpful. So I thought I would give you guys a little sense, a visual sense for what we're talking about. We look primarily in Wisconsin, just about 80 miles east of here, right along the Mississippi River, the upper Mississippi. You can see here, this is a landscape we're talking about, mixed temperate deciduous forest, primarily maple trees, that kind of thing. Dairy farms, soybeans, corn, you name it, it's all out there. You can see this is a frac sand mine being cleared, so these are the trees being removed, and then you have some active mining right there. Here, 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 and here, you have the active mines themselves, retention ponds, that kind of thing, all throughout some of these parcels. And then you can see here scattered evidence of reclamation going on in Wisconsin. And then down here, these are the terminals being used by the industry, being permitted and being built by the industry to get this stuff from upstream, from the mines themselves, out into the Utica, into the oil and gas plays themselves. So a kind of a brief history, so you've seen what these mines look like. Now I want to give you a brief history of how we came to be where we are today. Back in the day when traditional oil and gas was booming and we weren't in the unconventional phase, what we were seeing was that these sand mines were traditional sand and gravel areas, primarily the Riley and Hickory Brady formations in Oklahoma and Texas. This stuff was really good because the regulatory hurdles were low, the stuff was cheap to get out of the ground, it was in remote areas, so there was a variety of good reasons to mine it from there. The big problem, though, was this stuff is very angular, blocky, very coarse, has a lot of imperfections to it, and the issues there are is if we're putting $9 million into a well pad, we can't have this stuff gumming up the works when we're doing the high-volume fracking. So what we found, or what the industry said was, okay, well, there are these new plays developing up in North Dakota, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Ohio, that kind of thing. Let's see if we can find a closer source. So not only did they find a closer source in the form of the St. Peter sandstone formation and related formations you can see here listed, not only did they find a closer source, but they found a more pure, crush-resistant, reliable, closer to the surface source in the form of these formations right here, which caused some journalists to call the Great Lakes, Northern Great Lakes area, the Silica Arabia, right? So journalists and everyone was kind of hopping on the bandwagon. Industry analysts were saying, this is the next big boom with respect to oil and gas. You can see the stuff down here, or the stuff where we are right now, subject to a lot more river and stream activity, a lot more rounded, doesn't require a lot of reworking, a lot of resin coating, all sorts of other chemicals needed to make that angular stuff more round. And also the Great Lakes stuff that we're talking about across Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin, this stuff comes in a bunch of different grain sizes, which is critical to the fracking operation. Because as you go down 7,000 feet and these laterals go out 7,000 feet, as they get out towards the end of those, they require finer and finer sand to keep the shale seams open. This is just a kind of this is a visual. This is what we're talking about here in Minnesota. These are the kinds of sand and gravel materials that used to be used. So this is really pure stuff, really valuable stuff. So how are we getting this stuff out of the ground? Well, we're getting it out of the ground with strip mine technologies. So overburden removal, partitioning, that kind of thing, and then you get out your silica sand, which, depending on where you are, can be 5 to 15 to 25 meters below the surface. Again, stuff is very, very fine, very, very reliable. But we should say here, where we are right now, the overburden is less relative to those Oklahoma and Texas formations, theoretically. And as you can see here, this stuff is equitable across the grain sizes, which is critical for fracking operations. Just some images here. This is how we separate out the sand on site. So smaller operations are using these grain silos right here to separate out the sand on site. They dry it, they separate it, and they send it to those terminals. The larger companies like U.S. Silica, Superior Silica, they have separate drying and processing facilities. This is a separate drying processing facility. They're separating this stuff out into 4 grain sizes. Meanwhile, some of the smaller guys are doing 3 grain sizes. So that's a sense for the characteristics of this stuff, but what are the economic forces at play here? Well, quite simply, this industry, the oil and gas demand for silica sand, has exceeded the demand from other industries, namely the glass industry, bedding and dairy operations, road paving, drinking water filtration. We found out recently from a company called Unimin that they're actually taking the stuff that they were selling to these guys and putting it back in the hole, because the value of the frac sands is so high they don't even want to mess with the other stuff. The other thing to keep in mind is the production and the revenue component of this story has actually hit a hockey stick moment. Okay, so since the 90s, 23% of historical production, 54% of revenue has been generated since the late 90s. And you can see here, this is when the Barnett came online in the mid-90s and some other time and related shale plays. EOG Resources, they're one of the big players nationally. You can see a quote here, those who have sand or access to sand can pretty much charge what they want for that sand. So this is a huge boom going on right now. And then there's a decoupling. As I mentioned, we originally used sand and gravel, thought sand and gravel and silica are all one big thing, but indeed they're not. Net consumption of sand and gravel is actually declining. So the amount, there's somewhere in this country, we have reserves and mines that have a ton of sand and gravel ready to come on to market, come into this market, if this thing keeps skyrocketing. So that's going to be a concern in the future, is what do we do with reclamation on some of these sand and gravel pits? So those are the economics. We've talked about some of the traits of this stuff that make it real good for fracking. Well, here are some of the primary demand-side forces at play. You have the St. Peter and Wanawak formations spread across these eights. Here's your St. Peter, first documented by Keith Kettner at USGS in 1979. You also have demand is increasing by to the tune of 85 to 90 tons per lateral per quarter. You can see here, back in the day, we were talking about 150 tons per lateral per oil and gas well. We're now talking 3.5 to 4.3, or 3,500 to 4,300 tons of frac sands required to frac a well. So the demand is going up. Not only from that perspective is the actual demand going up, but our laterals, those things that go out, that go into these seams, they're getting longer and longer, to the tune of about 50 to 55 feet per quarter. So that demand is ramping up. Then you have the average mine proposals actually increasing from about 100 to 400 acres up to, 6,000, 8,000 acres, namely in Wisconsin. And then one thing that I did not put on this slide is the fact that when we go into these secondary, tertiary plays, oil and gas plays, and start to develop the fields there, or when we go into the perimeter of the good plays, we are seeing an inverse relationship between production of oil and gas and sand demand, which is to say that where production is high, they don't use as much sand, nor do they use as much water. But where it's low, they ramp it up. In Michigan, we're talking about 25,000 tons per HVHF lateral. So one of the big data gaps is we know from a demand side what the oil and gas industry is needing. But what we don't know is how much is being produced, which we need to know to project out forward to see how much reclamation we're going to have to be doing. We know data, permitted production data, for only 15 to 17% of our silica mines in the U.S. So we really need to ramp that up, and that's a big concern for ours. From a 30,000-foot perspective, some of the concerns of people and policymakers are the patchy data quantity and quality from all sorts of components of this story, whether it's rails, whether it's barges, you name it. We also are talking about increases in average speed on rail lines. That's not really relevant to this talk, but it is relevant for you to understand where we are in our understanding of this industry. We also know that there's a tremendous network of facilities all across the United States needed to support this industry and the oil and gas industry. Okay, you have transload facilities, intermodal facilities, resin coating facilities. These are important now because what they do is they coat the subangular blocky stuff or the round stuff to make it lubricate the seams more easily. These things are going to become more important if we start to see these sand and gravel guys come online too. So some of the other issues that we need to figure out are where is this stuff going? We know demand from a couple of states, but we don't really know it across all the plays. How's it going? At what rate? How is this affecting commodity transport? But these are not the things that people are concerned about on the ground. These are the things that people are concerned about based on a listening survey we did in these three states are things like energy return on energy invested, the food, energy, water nexus, real estate, landscape change, soil quality, all the things, you know, very important to the researchers at this conference. And we've asked these people, and they really want to answer these questions. So we tried to answer these questions, you know, coarsely at the regional, county, and individual mine level. And what we found was that for the silica sand plays here in Wisconsin, we found that these plays are generating about $400 to $782 million in woody biomass revenue. They're generating quite a bit of soil nitrogen. Okay, so these are the kinds of numbers, dollar figures, that are not incorporated into lease agreements, into policy when it comes to trying to reclaim these facilities. Tremendous amount of agricultural productivity, as you all know. Just some numbers here. I won't go through them all for the sake of time, but we have a tremendous amount of agricultural productivity. What kind of productivity can we generate on a reclaimed mine? That's a huge question, one that we're so far from answering. Okay, another big issue is that we heard time and time again that the industry is going for forested subplots within a larger parcel because of this. Because there were folks that we talked to were saying that the industry is saying, well, you know what, we'll take the wood off, sell it, take off our silica, reclaim it, and get it to a more gradual slope, and then you can use it, and then you can farm it. So there's a double whammy going on from a demand supply side right here. Critical question. And you can see here, we looked at Trempealeau County, which is a county right on the Mississippi River in Wisconsin, and we asked that question. And we found that 6% of the county is forested, 46% of the county is agriculture, but yet only 1.8% of the parcels, mined parcels, are agriculture. So indeed, in some counties, there is a disproportionate demand for forested areas. Then we looked at, from a mine proposal standpoint, this huge mine proposed in Barron County, Wisconsin, because we wanted to ask the question, what is the value of that mine today? Can we claw back some of that revenue, that value from the companies post-mining? So what we did was we just kind of asked this question, what's there, what's the value, what are the ecosystem services being generated, and can we incorporate those into lease agreements? And again, you can see here are some of the numbers. So this parcel, this is the largest silica sand mine proposed to date from Chieftain Minerals. It's spread out over 9 to 12 square miles. It's going to be a group of 9 mines. And what are they going to be displacing? It's a critical question. So then the final, basically the take home, or the final piece of this puzzle, and we're going to be continuing to work with our partners on this project, is to try to look at existing mines and try to figure out what's there, because not all of these parcels are actual mine. There are all sorts of other activity going on. So we used all these data sets. We know where the mines are. We tried to fractionate out the mines based on different components of a mine. And this was the work of Elliot Kurtz. He did some amazing work looking at this. And what we found is we broke up these mines into 7 different subcategories, and we asked the question, what has been displaced across these 78 mines? Again, this is a reclamation question. Are we going to be able to get any of this back? Who knows? And you can see here some of the numbers, crop losses, forest productivity, stumpage value, that kind of thing. So non-trivial amounts of land use change. And are those numbers being incorporated into lease agreements? The answer right now is no. So, you know, this is a more holistic reclamation story, you know, vis-a-vis coal mining. We need to get more towards that. So that's kind of some of that work there. So our future concerns, to kind of wrap this up, put a bow on this, are the plays, the silica plays we haven't looked at yet. Namely, the Sylvanian play, which is the highest purity silica we know of in the United States, just south of Detroit. We also know there's quite a bit of demand for silica on the eastern side of Lake Michigan, which is a dune, mostly dune system, so that brings in a whole bunch of questions about dune reclamation and the viability therein. Then we have questions about air quality and quantity, discharge, overburden management. There's a tremendous amount of overburden that's being moved around, and when are we reclaiming it, how are we reclaiming it, those kinds of questions. And then you can see here there's a tremendous amount of waste being generated. And if we start to use more and more chemicals, again, if the sand and gravel guys get involved, they're going to require more and more materials, namely acrylamide, resin materials. What is going to be the signature within all this wastewater being generated? So that's a critical question. And finally, the big point here is this big elephant in the room, which is the St. Peter Sandstone Formation, spread across all these states that we talked about a little bit earlier. And I've kind of broken it out based on my reading of things, that the reclamation question, again, very kind of 30,000 foot, the reclamation question is one having to do with crop productivity in these states, forest and wildlife habitat in these states, pasture and hay across most of the states, and then wetlands in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Iowa. So it's a big question. We have a lot of people working on this with us at University of Akron, Northeast Illinois, some other places. We're trying to get some grants, but it's hard for us to get some grants from the people you guys get grants from, so I'd be happy to collaborate with some folks. We have some foundation interest. We have the Save the Hills Alliance, the Gunn Foundation, the Heinz Foundation. They're all interested in funding this work, but they want an academic partner, so you know that's kind of a shameless plug. So with that, I'll call it quits. Yep.